As we explore our reading from Acts today, I'm going to share with you just a little bit more about our family cat lore. Okay, so these are, if you don't know, these are amusing anecdotes that my husband and I share together, stories of our cats that keep us entertained because honestly, we're kind of boring people who spend a lot of time at home. But what I'm gonna share with you today, okay, disclaimer, it's not to be read into too much, nor is it connected to my opinion of any group of people or religious body, okay? That is the disclaimer I'm offering to you. So our eldest cat, she's about 11 years old. Her name is Maisel, and she was named after the character of the show, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. An important cultural aspect of said show is that she is a Jewish New Yorker, and so naturally our cat Maisel is also Jewish. But I think that our cat, Maisel, might just be more culturally Jewish because honestly, I've never seen her go to synagogue. And she has never even invited us to a Shabbat dinner. And we're also just not really sure if Maisel keeps kosher either. She's not really much into people food, but she goes wild for ham. And ham is not kosher. You see, after Easter, we had a lot of leftover ham and we would give it to her. And she kind of almost did this ritualistic thing multiple times with the ham where she would eat most of it and then she would deposit a chunk into her water bowl. And now clearly, she was trying to make the ham clean so that maybe it would be kosher. Unfortunately, though, that's not how it works. Now, the thing about kosher laws is they are all biblical. They mostly come from the books of Leviticus and Deuteronomy. And if one chooses to keep kosher, essentially it is this kind of list of rules. It's a list of rules on what animals to eat and not to eat, how to prepare said food, for instance, pork products, not kosher. Leviticus 11 says this about the pig. Though it has a split hoof, it does and does not chew the cud, it is unclean to you, so you must not eat their meat or touch their carcasses. They are unclean. So some of our Jewish friends and siblings, they do practice these kosher laws. And it also matters how the animal has been slaughtered and the removal of blood and this other rules like not to cook meat and dairy together. There are quite a few others, and I am not an expert, but those are some of the main ones. Now, some people like to say that the original purpose of these laws was to avoid certain diseases in animals, and that's kind of like a maybe, but that's kind of a modern take on an ancient people and our own germ theory on people who did not believe the same things. It could be practical, but more likely, it is so that the Israelite people during their time could set themselves apart from the people around them. It's this correlation between their basic lifestyles being different and their faith being different. Around them are many different cultures that have lots of polytheistic traditions, meaning many gods. And that's why the book of Leviticus and Deuteronomy are so chock full of rules and regulations. The people, in order to survive as a community, needed to differentiate themselves and set themselves apart so that they could be this distinct community, so that they could learn how to follow a God that was very different from the gods of other cultures. And it's important to know that sometimes we do need those black and white rules for how to do something, especially when we're just learning. But our passage for Acts today, it's not really about the abolishment of kosher laws. It is the main reason why we as Christians do not follow them, but it's about something way bigger than that, way bigger than what we can or can't eat. It's a tale of who is in the community and who is outside of the community. It's God's way of showing us that if we're following Jesus, we're following a new path, a new way of being. Now, last weekend, I was away. I was downstate visiting my husband's family. They threw a really lovely shower for us, for our baby. And we also went to church with them on Sunday. Now, they happen to attend an evangelical church. And as a disclaimer, because I get this question a lot, we are called Messiah Evangelical Lutheran Church. But the word itself, evangelical, means the good news or of the gospel. That's where we take it from. We're not the same type of vein as people who consider themselves to be evangelicals. We're Lutherans. So my husband grew up in this different tradition, in the Baptist kind of evangelical tradition, but I'm a cradle Lutheran. I haven't actually ever been to an evangelical church. Last weekend was my first time. My husband knew what to expect, so he told me in preparation, this is the only thing he told me, he said, you can't be upset when there's no communion. There won't be communion. Luckily, I had my travel communion kit, so I offered it to everyone at the end of worship. I'm just kidding. I did not do that. That would have been very rude. It's okay. I survived. It was an interesting experience. The people were so kind, so friendly, so welcoming. The worship style was very different than what I was used to. There were songs and there was a speaker, but for me, there was no liturgy, the words of worship, the rhythms that we follow in the Lutheran tradition. And so I felt a little bit like when it was the end, I was like, is that it? There was no confession. There was no scripture. There wasn't even the Lord's Prayer. What are we doing? But it's okay. Not everyone worships the same way, and I have to be okay with that. But as we were debriefing afterwards, my husband said something that made me really think. He said that the thing that bothered him the most was not the lack of liturgy or not standing and sitting all the time. He said the thing that bothered him the most was when a man was praying for a person who had died, he said something like this. We know he's in heaven with you, God, because there's evidence that he knew Jesus. And what bothered him was not that this man who died was faithful, but that there was this necessity, almost, to prove that he was faithful enough to deserve to be in heaven. And we had to know that for sure. You see, my husband Ethan grew up in this very different religious world from me, where he was afraid of whether he was ever going to be good enough for God's love. He grew up doing altar calls and being baptized multiple times in order to prove that he loved God enough and that he was holy enough to finally just belong. And for me, growing up in the Lutheran tradition, I think I have really taken this for granted. Taken for granted to feel like what it feels like to not worry about God's love for me. To feel included, to have the privilege of that, to never really experience the painfulness of exclusion. So if you're the opposite, if you feel like you do make the cut, honestly, that can feel really good. If you feel like you've got that little bit of power, it can feel even better to set the rules for who gets to be in and who gets to be out. And I know we as human people, we love to set boundaries, rules around who's in and who's out, who's worthy of God's love, and maybe who doesn't quite make the cut, because it can make us feel a little superior sometimes. But the opposite of that is if you do feel or have ever questioned whether you belong, or maybe even been told, oh, you are loved as long as you do this or do that. You are loved as long as maybe you just like keep that part of yourself a little quiet. Maybe change just a little bit. then you get it. You get how hurtful it can feel. Like you don't really belong. Like you're excluded. Like you're maybe a fake around kind and well-intentioned people who want smiles but don't really want to know you fully. And so when we look at Acts, we can say this passage is about the abolishment of kosher laws, but that's also kind of missing the point about God, what God is really trying to teach us through Simon Peter. It's not really about the animals being clean. It's about the people. It's about breaking down these rules that once categorized who was in and who was out, reinterpreting them. You see, the Gentiles, us, that's just really a generalized term for all non-Jewish people. Accepting them into this new tradition of following the way of Jesus is radical. Believing them to be worthy of God's love is radical. What was very stringent and regulated concerning who is in and out is now expanding for the church. But we know that change and expansion is a scary thing. It was scary for them at the beginning of the church. It's even probably scary for us now. And that probably is what made people concerned. That's probably why we have 2,000 years of rules of who is in and who is out. We ask those questions like, how do they know what rules to follow? What even are the rules? How do we really know that they're following the way of Jesus in a right and proper way? How can we have proof that they believe enough or that God has come to them? Unfortunately, when there are a lot of questions, a vacuum of questions, you might say, there is this desire by human people to create rules. Rules around who gets to be in and who gets to be out. But those rules are not Jesus's rules. Those are our rules. And so this leads me to two different thoughts. The first is, wow, I'm just really thankful to be a part of this community that does seek to welcome and to include all people, period, no exceptions. To have grown up in a tradition that I always felt welcomed in and that I belonged in, I don't take that for granted. And also just the relief that we don't have to check anyone's credentials at the door, that anyone can come in and know Jesus and follow the way. But my second thought is, who's missing? Why are they missing? By allowing God to just love us without exclusion, we have this really great opportunity. We have this opportunity to heal past wounds that come from years of human beings just being human beings, of hurting one another in the name of God. We have the opportunity to allow a different story to be told about the church, for a new chapter of the church to unfold, for everyone to get to know Jesus. So if you ever wonder who belongs, or maybe you come up against some exclusionary attitudes, I want you to really hold tight to this passage from Acts. Use it as a guide, because Acts says, if then God gave them the same gift that God gave us when we believed in Jesus Christ, who was I that I could hinder God? Remember this. Remember that God gives the gift of relationship and love freely, not based upon your worth, not based upon whether you're going to write a thank you note to God. And knowing Jesus is a gift, truly. It opens the doors to learn the way to follow this truly life-giving path. In the here and in the now. And truly, why would we want to hinder or deny people from that? Why would we feel like we are so important that we get to choose who gets that love and who doesn't? And so, step out of God's way. Hold on to Acts in relationship with what Jesus says in the gospel. And Jesus says this I give you a new commandment that you love one another, just as I have loved you. This is the only commandment Jesus gives us, and it's the rule by which we now live. Those rules from Leviticus and Deuteronomy, they were essential. In a time and a place, they helped form a community that survived despite all odds so that we as Gentiles could also come to know God. And they were a part of our, and they are a part of our history. But now we put what Jesus says first. Jesus reinterpreted those rules for us. We now live by Jesus's more expansive commandment through which everything else is interpreted. So our mission is this. It's to let ourselves be loved. Let ourselves be loved by God so that we are capable of loving one another and sharing that good news with everyone, without exception. Amen.